Welcome to Documentary First, an inside look at a first time, well, dadgummit.
You know what? I do still feel like I'm a first time filmmaker, honestly. So I think you could say it. I'm still going through first time filmmaker blues. So keep going.
Welcome to Documentary First, an inside look at a documentary filmmaker's journey. That doesn't sound right still, but I want you to know I'm your host, Josh Lindsay from the Movie Proposal Podcast. And with us is our documentary filmmaker, Christian Taylor.
Hello, Josh Lindsay.
Hello, Christian Taylor in orange. It looks like you're all in orange.
Lots of orange in this room.
Yeah, it's not just the background. Okay, and with us, as always, couldn't do it without him, the trusty dusty research extraordinaire, button pushing guy, Jason Rugg.
Hey there.
Oh, hey, Jason. I just love it when you get your whole title in there. That's super fun.
That's not even the whole title. Like, I mean, cinnamon roll, animator, like.
Yeah, you guys, if you're not following Jason Rugg on Twitter, you should, because he is funny. And he also has a great Instagram page. You should be following him on Instagram as well with all of his new little animations. Speaking of which, Jason, tell us what's going on in your life.
We've actually backed off doing daily animations for a little while. We kind of needed to kind of refill the hopper of things we've written. And also we just have decided to kind of reorient towards potentially seeing if we could reformat the stuff we've made for Instagram into like an animated TV show type thing. And so we're in the process of figuring that out now. And we're seeing where that'll lead us. I don't really have any much more news beyond that. But right now we release one sketch every Saturday. We're looking to ramp back up into that. And I'll have a link to the Instagram in the description so you can just find it that way.
Yeah. And tell people how they can find you on Twitter.
So my Twitter, if you just look up Jason Rugg, I'm like the first one that comes up. Unfortunately, some guy named Jason Rugg took at Jason Rugg very early on when Twitter was created and then never used it. And so it like bots are on it tweeting random things about life insurance or, you know, various things. And
that's me. It's not a robot. Yeah.
but haven't legitimately, I don't think even the bots have used it since like 2013 or something.
Can you offer to like buy that like a URL or something?
So I've tried reaching out to them and they don't reply. So I don't know if they just don't even.
The bots aren't interested in your so-called money.
Well, so Twitter was going to do this thing for a while where they were going to take old dead handles. And if they'd been inactive for like 5 years, make them public again. And a bunch of people were like, no, my friend, you know, he actually died. And his Twitter feed is one of the last things that we still have of him. They were like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to have to figure out something else. And it's like, yeah, this clearly isn't a real person. It's clearly just.
Oh, that's weird. A drag. Yeah. Well, I think it's at Jace Ruggy, right?
Yeah. But if you just look up Jason Rugg with 2 G's, I pop up too, because the other one's just so inactive. They don't even like recommend it to anyone.
Okay. And then your Instagram is JAXNCHAWN.
Which that's part of what we're working on. We're going to rename it because it's so hard to pronounce and actually search, because it sounds like Jackson and then Chon isn't a word. So you think it's Jackson Chon and it's Jax and Chon, but that's so hard to. So we're figuring
it's
out.
It's kind of like deja vu, docu. No.
You couldn't even do it.
Docu vu, deja vu.
Yep.
What a stupid title.
You proved your own point. Thank you.
Oh, goodness. All right. Josh Lindsay, what's happening in your life?
In terms of stuff related to this, we just had Caitlin Schess from the Holy Post podcast on to discuss Turning Red, the latest Pixar animated film. And that was a lot of fun. And then our next one coming out is actually the Mark Wahlberg Father Stew passion project of his, which is in theaters right now. But it is, you know, springtime, getting close to summer. In a week, we're having another Marvel film come out. So there are more blockbuster type stuff coming up. And that's when we get most of our listeners are for the fun blockbuster-y kind of type stuff. So we're entering into that season. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Awesome.
as a preview for people, we don't normally talk about our something blues from the movie Proposal early. Like, we usually surprise each other. So Josh, you'll have to not tell Sky this.
I'll act surprised.
My next something blue is going to be A Blue Mind. And it's Everything Everywhere All at Once. I went and saw
it. Oh, you liked it, huh?
Insane.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that also.
You gotta see. It's like there's moments in that movie where it cuts to like a rock on a cliff for like several minutes and it's hilarious. It's a rock on a cliff and wind blowing and you're just going, yes, this is amazing. It's like, wow. I can't even begin to describe how this movie makes sense, but it makes sense totally as you watch it. It's really complicated but really fun.
What a funny title too.
It looks great.
It's incredible. You gotta go see it.
All right.
Okay. Well, Christian, we have a lot to get caught up on. Do you want to start with distribution? You need to.
This is the week. We wrapped up our limited series this week. This is the week we out these terrible distributors, which you should never work with. And the name is, what were the initials, boys?
FFS.
That's it. The name is Factory Film Studio in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Mm. So do not, whatever you do, work with them. So there you have it. You have heard about my experience with them over the last three episodes. You've also heard, I think, in general, some distribution things I learned. So now we're turning a new chapter.
I do have a question. Yeah. Are you doing anything in terms of review, like, you know, posting a negative review or letting, I mean, obviously you have a podcast and you're letting people know this, but are you doing anything proactively to let people know you had a bad experience?
Interesting question. And I have an interesting answer. I went to the Dubuque Film Festival in Dubuque, Iowa this week, just got back on Sunday. And there I met a couple of Canadians, ironically enough. One of them was a filmmaker slash writer, and he did encourage me to write a better business review because they have a better business bureau in Canada. And somebody else had mentioned that to me, and I was like, oh, that's stupid. Nobody's going to look that up. And he's like, that's the very least you can do. Go and do that. So yes, I'm going to do that. And I am going to, once this is released, I am going to say something on Twitter and my social media platforms. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it's a drop in the bucket. I think me going to film festivals or, you know, just talking about it in general is going to do more good than, you know, any of those things.
I think that's true. However, if I was a filmmaker and crossed paths with you or followed you or something, and I never knew that you had a bad experience, and then I ended up coincidentally using the same company, but it could have been prevented because you put a bad review on there because I was looking for reviews and no one bothered to put a bad review, I would be frustrated. You know, I think I would want to see that, you know. So
well, that's good advice. And I do think one takeaway from this is you ought to look up on the Better Business Bureau or in any way you can, any report about any distributor. So good question, Josh.
Yeah. And obviously it's kind of like a restaurant, you know, like I'm really mad at Panera right now. it just keeps screwing up my order. And it's just so frustrating just to like, but
how complicated is your order?
What's that?
How complicated is your order?
We don't have time to explain. So that you go, oh, I see what they did. Yeah. And then it's not even that interesting. Just trust me when I tell you, like,
you're making me hungry for Panera. I guess that's what I'm doing for lunch.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll go back. It's just so just because there's a bad review doesn't mean they're a horrible company. But I do think there needs to be a conversation out there. You know, there's people make up their own minds, you know, and if there's good reviews for this company, then they should post that too. But, anyhow, moving on. So
the other news is, you know, they still haven't responded to our termination letter agreement. They haven't sent us any money. I have been after my lawyer to write a follow-up email basically saying we are considering taking our, you know, audit. You might well just better go ahead and pay us because you'll have to pay that fee too. I don't anticipate that to get a reply either, but at least it's something we can do. So okay. Hopefully that will happen. In other news and distribution, and then I want to talk about this past weekend and a couple of other things, but I just got off the phone with Joe Amadei of Virgil Films, and I am happy to announce that we have struck a verbal agreement at this moment for him to distribute the film, and he's going to be sending me his contract to review, which I will. I have actually checked him out with a whole bunch of different people. Everybody I've checked out has had positive things to say about Virgil Films. And these now are filmmakers that I've met in person. I have, you know, talked with them. They've been happy with their distribution process. So that's exciting. I have been working with them for almost a year now. So now I have my own personal experience with them. One of the things I love about them the most is how transparent they are and responsive they are, honest and upfront. He tells me bad news, even when I don't want to hear it. The bad news this week was that he cannot take my film to the Cannes Film Market because the copyright was in 2021 and the Cannes Film Market doesn't want to see a film if it was done before December 2021. So that's sad and disappointing. But however, he is agreeing to be a sales agent for us internationally. So he will go to a bunch of different sales markets. He will go to Cannes with a sales packet for The Girl Who Wore Freedom. He's not able to screen it there, but he is able to try and sell it there to other distributors. But really in that capacity, he's acting as a sales agent, and then will connect me with other distributors. He's promised me that he knows these international distributors personally, and that they don't do crazy stuff and they do what they say. So that's exciting. What we did learn is they won't start the process of intaking the film and putting it up until after they get back from Cannes, which will be in June. And it does take several months, so it probably won't be able to be viewable on different platforms until at least August. So it's going to be another process, and but I'm looking forward to it now. I feel like I have a lot more experience. I'm doing this with a trusted partner, so I'm happy about that. In the meantime, I have more exciting news. Ooh. In the meantime, thanks to my crack team, and I may have said this last week, I don't remember, but we are now on our website selling DVDs and streaming services. So we put up the English version last week. Today, we are launching the French version, and we will launch the dual language version shortly after that. So that means, you know, our film, you know, you can go to our website, click on the stream now button, and you can choose. Do you want to watch the French version, the dual language version, or the English version? So I'm super excited about that. We've already had DVDs that have sold and streaming links that have sold. And I should be getting a deposit of some funds for about four streaming, you know, things that have been sold, this weekend. So that's a start, and that's exciting. So yeah, I'm feeling a little bit encouraged about this distribution situation.
Oh, good. Yes, you should. So what's your time frame in terms of reviewing and the back and forth before signing, do you think?
Question. What he's going to do is send me their traditional contract, and then I can strike through or revise anything on there. So again, we've talked about I'm keeping the theatrical rights, I'm keeping the DVD rights now, and I will make a decision about whether or not to keep the educational rights. And you know, it's just going to be a matter of going through that now and looking, you know, figuring out how to carve out whatever is in my best interest. Now, I think what's not going to be negotiable is their fee is, you know, 30%. So that's a little bit higher than FFS. FFS was 25%. What we didn't talk about is how long the distribution agreement will be in place for. I would prefer to do a shorter one than a longer one. We'll see what they say. And there will be, of course, distribution fees, which I think are going to be higher than Virgil Films. Virgil's was about $1,500, but they only placed it in four places. So
you don't mean Virgil, you mean FFS?
FFS, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I mean FFS. See, I'm already Xing them out of my vocabulary, which is good. Yeah, because, you know, basically the way Joe explained it is that the distribution fees that come are because he's going to take it to a place, and the place, I think it's called Global Interactive. They take the film, they prepare it for going up on Amazon and iTunes and stuff like that. And of course that costs a fee, and they charge Joe and Virgil Films that fee. The more platforms you put it up on, so, you know, then there's the ingesting into the platform and setting all that up, the more the distribution fees are going to be. And what I love about Joe is he does explain to you exactly what the process is and why those things cost money. And, you know, he will send a report saying how much those things cost. So I think, you know, even just the list that he gave me about where they will put the film, you know, will be like on Amazon, it'll be on iTunes, it'll be on Tubi and Pluto, it'll be on some documentary streaming sites. So there's a much longer list of places where they're going to be able to put up the film than before. So I think the distribution expenses will probably be a little bit higher.
I have a question. Jason, maybe you know something about this as well. Let's say you have a business and you're marketing it on social media like Facebook or something, where you have the opportunity to pay to get it out to more people, a more strategic audience. With a streaming service, so let's say you get on Amazon, are there things you can do to bump your film to the top so more people see it?
Yeah, I mean, you pay for advertising. It's just like you would do on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. You know, if you want people to see your stuff, you have to pay extra to boost it or to promote it, right? So you can buy banner ads, or you can buy even on Air France and Delta. If you want to be in their spotlight, it's not because Delta thinks these movies are so great, let's spotlight these. No, it's because people have paid more money in order to have their films spotlit. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. People that are willing to pay for marketing and advertising are going to get your eyeballs, as opposed to those who don't have it or don't want to spend it.
Okay. And is there any plan to do that with this film?
I think that's something that Joe and I are going to need to talk about, you know, how that marketing is going to be done. I do think that if they do marketing, there was a phrase in our contract with FFS where we agree to only pay third-party marketing costs. I think that's what it was, or else we wouldn't pay for third-party marketing costs. I don't know. But there are marketing and advertising fees that we would have to pay for sure. So I don't know. I'll have to look at the contract and see. But if they don't do the marketing, nobody's going to find your film. So you at least, and then there are a lot of distribution companies. So I talked about Gravitas before in a previous episode, where they're like, yeah, we'll take your film for 15 years and you got to do all the marketing, right? So you're like, well, that's a great deal. Woohoo.
Right.
So, you know, I just think I am already doing marketing that is going to happen for me, because I do want to do these screenings, because I think people are asking for them. It's important to do them, and I like doing them. And then when I'm there, it does market the film for people to buy DVDs or the streaming link. So, but I'm going to want them to do some marketing as well, if they're going to put it on Amazon or iTunes for people to find it. So we'll see.
All right. To be determined. All right. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So we talk about Virgil Films. We've updated you on FFS. Cannes Film Market. Okay, you just got back from a film festival, yes?
Yes, I did. I just got back from the Dubuque International Film Fest. I recorded from there last week during our podcast, so I probably talked about it a little bit, but I still just cannot rave about it enough. It was just a phenomenal experience because of the quality of films that were there, one of which I will talk about in our DocuView Deja Vu segment. And then the people that I met. So I just met some heavy hitters in terms of people that are showrunners in LA, people that are executive producers and producers in LA of many shows that you would know. A large amount of people were from LA. Ironically, there were only two of us from the Chicago market. We're only 3 hours from Dubuque. So I don't understand that at all. But we had people from Austria. We had people from Cambodia. Like, it really is an international film festival. And so you meet all these people. You can swap stories about distribution. One of the things I loved this time is the filmmakers would go around in the filmmaker lounge and say, come see my film, come see my film. And the filmmakers would go and support them. Christian, come on, I'm gonna see my buddy's film. And so I love that camaraderie. You feel like you have met your people. And so that was just great. There were parties every night. And quite frankly, you guys, I have never done this since college. You know, I didn't drink. I didn't go to a big party school. I wasn't that kind of person. And so I never really did this. But like the first night everybody went out, I didn't go at all. The second night I was out till 2:30. And, you know, there was an event. And then afterwards I went to another bar and I was like, finally at 2:30, I'm like, I'm out. I've got to go home. So I went home and went to bed. The second to the last night when we had the big award ceremony and we now everybody gotten to know each other well, there was a huge after party after it was over. And I mean, I stayed with a group of people till we shut it down. You know, they had a bar and we were dancing and you're just, you know, building that camaraderie. And then there was a person in our group, I mentioned this film last week, called Robert's Village. And the director of that is Brian Buss. And, you know, I think it was his first film festival. He was just so excited. He did win Best Documentary, just like I thought he would. And he had to leave at 5 a.m. And he knew that it was going to be a late night. So he packed his bag and put it by his door. And he was like, this is going to be a night. And so at the end of the big party that everybody was a part of and, you know, didn't have to pay for, when it ended, Brian had 5 hours before his limousine, or not his limousine, but his shuttle showed up to take him to the airport. And so for some reason, we decided we were going to make a film called 5 Hours with Brian. And so we'd started filming this like on three different phones, our iPhones, right? Brian has one, another guy named Brandon has one, and I have one. We're filming this 5 Hours with Brian because we all hung out in this big group. Another filmmaker named Bruna, who's from Brazil, who lives in LA now, made a great film. She was there with us. And so we are going to go on this adventure, 5 Hours with Brian. So now it's midnight and we start to leave and Brian goes to get his trophy and he can't find it anywhere. And so he's looking everywhere for his trophy. We don't even get out of there till 12:30 because we're looking for the trophy. Where is his very first trophy that he's won? So then we decide to call it 5 Hours with Brian and the Mystery of the Missing Trophy. So this was going to be our hunt for the evening. And so, of course, the next place we had to look for it was Oddfellows Bar, naturally. And so we go there. And of course, you know, everybody is having a wonderful time. I'm meeting, you know, tons of people. And then the next thing I know, it's 2:30 and that bar is closing. And we still have 3 hours to go or 2.5 hours to go before Brian has to leave. So the band apparently rented an Airbnb. And the next thing I know, we're all at the band's house. Finally, at like 3 o'clock on the video, I'm like, I have reached my limit. I cannot do this till 5 a.m. I am 55 years old. I cannot stay. But for whatever reason, the next thing I know, at 4:30, I'm still there. And we are walking Brian back to the hotel where we think, well, maybe Robert, who was wise enough to go to bed, you know, at midnight, Robert maybe has the trophy. So we go to Robert and Brian's room, and sweet Robert, this is the guy from Uganda who the film was about, had left the door cracked open for Brian in case he lost his key or got so, you know, out of his mind that he didn't know how to get back in. He left the door open for him. And so we go into the room at like 4:30 and there he is getting dressed. And Robert, his arm is deformed. So he does have trouble getting dressed and doing things for himself. And so he's standing there trying to put on his shirt. And we walk in and we see the trophy sitting right on Brian's bed, right at the corner, standing up so that Brian would see it when he get in. Just so sweet. And Brian walked in to see him and he started buttoning his shirt, you know, and you could just see the special relationship that the two of them had made over the course of filming this film together. And so it was this sweet, you know, ending to our movie. And then I needed to take Brian back to his hotel. I did. It's like 4:45. I get back to my hotel where Brian and Robert are staying, and they're in the lobby. So of course I keep filming, and we're filming till he leaves at 5 a.m. And I get to my room and I'm like, oh my gosh, I just stayed up till 5 a.m. What is happening to me? I don't even want to go back and look at the footage, but we made, and I was totally sober the entire time. You know, it wasn't like there was anything untoward happening. But we just had such a great time, and it was, you know, we made such, I don't know, great memories and contacts. And yes, I have a whole Rolodex of contacts in LA that I will follow up on. And I talked to a woman about distributing our film on DVD in retail stores. And so that was very exciting because I may only make, you know, $5 to $8 a DVD, but that's more than I would be making if I didn't sell it. And I don't have to do huge, large quantities. I can send them 100 or 200 at a time. So that was exciting. Yeah. So all in all, it was a great film festival. I was super happy I did it. And I came away feeling very encouraged and hopefully without COVID. We'll see. I've only been home since Sunday. I have heard reports that maybe there were some people with COVID. I'm just hoping they have, you know, hangovers and it's not really COVID.
Well, I read Well, I just read the pandemic's over, so you have nothing to worry about.
Well,
right?
Well, that's good because I'm supposed to be on a plane to France on Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, but so in 7 days, and I certainly hope I do not have COVID.
You know, those late night stuff, I know those are important, you know, whether it's in, you know, and not just late night, but just like, you know, the hanging out, camaraderie, you know, whatever it is. And I love people, but, you know, up to a point. And so staying up till 5 in the morning, like to me, even in college, I remember I was an RA and they'd have these retreats and it would be at midnight. I'm like, guys, I gotta go to bed. And they were going to the wee hours. And I knew they were just going to have stronger friendships and relationships than I, but I couldn't, like, it just seemed, well, I'm not going to be with you mentally anyway, if I stay up till 3 in the morning. So it's going to make me sick and I'm out. So these types of things, I don't know how you.
Well, I really did not have confidence that I could do it. And I was very worried the next day. Thankfully, I didn't really have anything to do. I did want to watch a film. But when I knew I was at 5 a.m., I'm like, okay, how many hours of sleep do I really need? And fortunately, I was driving back. I didn't have to catch a plane. So, I did get 5 hours of sleep. I just couldn't have done it if I'd had to be up early or if I had to. But there were people there who didn't sleep and then went on and got on a plane and went home. I'm like, I cannot do that.
Don't understand it.
I don't either. But you have to be. You have to be a certain kind of personality, I think. You know, I'm an extrovert. And the weird thing was, it didn't feel like 5 a.m. Like, you just feel, it feels probably 10, 11, 12 at night. And so it's sort of the way I felt like when I was in France. In France, it doesn't get dark till like 11, 11:30. And so you're just doing stuff and you have no idea that it's almost midnight. And that's kind of the way it felt for me. So, but I saw some great films and, you know, had some great times and walked away with a potential DVD distribution deal. So worked out well for me.
Oh, that's great. All right. And next week you have, what is the Reims Film Festival?
Yes. Good memory. I am going to France, otherwise known as Reims in America. And I am going to arrive on the 5th and I'll be there till the 9th. I'm going to be meeting with Michelle Coupe, a co-producer, Flo Boucherie, a co-producer, Danny, the girl who wore freedom, Denis Vandenbrink, one of our historians in the film, and then a Delta executive, Paul Hassenstraub, I think his name is, whose grandfather, I think, was liberated in 1944. So he'll be there, and Helen Patton. So it's going to be kind of a mini reunion of the film. I've never been to Reims, and so I'm looking forward to that. And we're up for 3 awards, best documentary, best editing, and best score. So that will be phenomenal. And
did you say who's going with you?
I'm flying by myself, but yes, I did list all those people just now.
Yeah. Sorry, I misunderstood what you were saying. Okay, but they'll be there with you.
Yeah, they'll all be there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they'll all be there.
Make it more fun. All right. Very cool. All right. Will you be broadcasting from there, or?
We'll be putting up pictures on social media, and you know, I will probably maybe do a few lives and stuff like that. But yeah, that's about it. And I will probably take some books and maybe some DVDs. We'll see. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I will get back on the 9th, however, and I leave on the 12th to go to DC. It has just been confirmed that our film is going to be shown at the Air and Space Museum at Udvar-Hazy Theater. And I'm excited about that. It's like a 470 seat theater. I don't know how we're going to get all those people there, but hopefully we will. And that will happen on the night of the 12th. And then I'll go straight from there to New York, and I'll be at this big event in New York City. And then we'll come home. And it sounds like we've locked in a deal at the National Infantry Museum at Fort Benning to do a screening somewhere around the 26th of May before we jet off to France. So.
All right. Yeah. Very exciting.
Wow. It is.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be alive June 25th when I get home. We'll see.
All right. Well, hey, I think we covered everything to get caught up to date. Is there something else we were missing?
The only thing I want to say is I want to give a shout out to Chad Gilchrist, and in particular, Taylor Banowski, who's joined our team, been here for a week. I have basically turned over all the producer duties for the Carentan project that's coming up, and she has been knocking it out of the park. It's really the first time that I've had a well-trained, you know, U.S. producer who's got lots of experience, and she's just phenomenal to work with. So I'm so thankful about that. It's all coming together for our screening or for our filming for this Carentan project. And yeah, super happy. So there's that.
Rock and roll. Okay. Well, I want to shift gears to our, I keep calling it new segment, DocuView Deja Vu. DocuView
Deja Vu. Nice job.
Thanks. All right.
wait, we didn't give a proper pause. Say it one more time.
I did. I paused. You guessed.
I know. It was my trouble.
You can just edit it out. I'll go first. I don't know what you call this, Jason. Maybe you can name this, but there's a podcast that features filmmakers and tells their stories, but they do it through a kind of a dramatic retelling. But it's a podcast, so it's called Blockbuster. And I think they started with Spielberg and Lucas telling their stories together, where they have actors who portray, you know, these filmmakers. You hear someone narrating the story about, you know, how they got this project and things went wrong, and then this led to this and so on, and then the success of their films. And it's very dramatic, you know, it's told not in a bullet point kind of way, but more of a storytelling kind of way. But it's a podcast. And then they did James Cameron. I think they did someone else, but it's fantastic. Especially if you're from the 80s, you know, you grew up on a lot of these films from Cameron, Lucas, and Spielberg. Definitely worth checking out.
Awesome. That's fantastic. All right, go on. What about you, Jason? What's your thing to bring to the table today?
All right, so I've actually been thinking about this for a little while. It's actually also a podcast. It's just a podcast-centric week. It's do you guys remember that song by Billy Joel? It's We Didn't Start the Fire.
Of yes. course. Billy okay. Joel's my fave.
So there's a podcast where they're going through and recapping what every single line in We Didn't Start the Fire means. Oh. So every single, you know, like Harry Truman, Doris Day, like they're going through and they're bringing
China
in experts.
Johnny Way.
Yeah. Yeah. And they bring in experts to talk through what that meant, what that story was, that sort of thing, when it happens chronologically. And it's pretty fascinating.
I would love this. This is a film?
No, it's a podcast series.
Every
episode they do one line from it. And you're going to have to give me just 1 second to actually find the name.
Oh, man, that sounds fantastic. But I have a question. When do you guys have time to listen to a podcast
in the car.
In the car, walking.
Yeah, both of you drive and walk a lot. I've just been sitting in my, you know, studio. I don't really do either of those.
I don't do good with podcasts. Just being at home. I like listening, and my office is only 7 minutes, but I'm still listening for 7 minutes, to podcasts or whatnot. But
Christian, who travels all the time, has no time to listen to podcasts.
Do you want to know truthfully what I'm doing when I'm traveling? I was just thinking about this. I'm sure it will not surprise you to know. When I drove to Dubuque and I drove home to Dubuque, I was on the phone the entire time talking to people. And so I didn't have enough people. I didn't have enough time to talk to all the people I wanted to talk to. I think I could talk all day long. I think that's possible.
So what we just learned is that Josh and I are listeners, and you.
Yep. I think it's true.
So the name of the podcast is We and Start the Fire, the History Podcast.
I am going to have to check that out. But you know what? That would also be a fun documentary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They actually had Billy Joel on, and he talks about writing it and everything.
Oh, gosh. Oh, now, now you've hooked me. My favorite Sirius XM channel is the Billy Joel channel. And they only do it seasonally, like the Big Mac, right? Or the McRib, or the Shamrock Shake. And every time they do, if you have not listened to it on Sirius XM, it is phenomenal, because you just learned so much about him, and he's so entertaining. He is the entertainer, in my opinion. So one on my bucket list is seeing him at Madison Square Garden. I cannot wait to do that.
Very cool.
Well, so, you better hurry up. He's not like,
I know. Trust anymore. Me. I know. I've tried to tell my husband, I've given him 3 dates this year, and he's like, no, we can't do any of those. I'm like, we cannot wait. I wanted to see so bad. I wanted to see James Taylor in concert and Sting. And I mean, not Sting, the Police. And neither one of those ever happened. So that's kind of sad. Okay. So are you ready for mine?
Yeah.
All right. So my documentary recommendation is The Automat. Heard of The Automat?
Sounds familiar. Keep going.
Do you even know what an automat is?
No.
I had no idea what an automat was either. And I went because Mel Brooks was in it, and I heard it was funny. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I love Mel Brooks. I'm in. So The Automat, this is a film by Lisa Hurwitz and written by Michael Levine. I don't know how you say his name. Mel Brooks is in it. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in it. Elliot Gould is in it. Carl Reiner is in it. Colin Powell is in it. It's got some heavy hitters there, and it is, it's surprisingly great. And it talks about, sort of in the turn of the century, when, people wanted, cheap food fast, these two guys, their names began with H and H, and I can't remember their actual names, but their Horn company was called
Hardened.
Yes. How did you know? Hardart.
I've got it pulled up.
Horn and Hardart. Yes. So Horn and Hardart created the Automat. And what was so interesting is that I think it was Horn put an advertisement in the paper for a business partner. They found each other and they created this Automat. And it's basically like a vending machine for food. And everything cost a nickel. And so you'd put the nickel in and you would open this little door and you could get everything. You could get mashed potatoes, green beans. You could get, stew and macaroni and cheese and pies and cookies and coffee. And everybody loved their coffee. And apparently the food was so good that, it was just this bustling place. Lots of well-to-do people went there. It was a beautiful environment. So people loved eating there, loved hanging out there. And the history of the Automat, which of course, we have none now. And so what happened to it? That's what the story is all about. And so those people that I listed that were in the film, they talk about their experiences with the Automat and how that played a role in their lives. And it is funny and warm, heartwarming. So The Automat, and I don't know that it's out yet. It's still in the film festival circuit. So, but I did see there was a Rotten Tomatoes. Did you click on that by any chance, Jason?
I'm pulling up screen possibilities. It's playing right now in New York City, at the New Plaza Cinema on weekends only. It's also
on weekends only.
Philadelphia and Pleasantville, New York. Those are the three places it's screening right now.
Okay. So it's interesting. It's 98% on the tomato meter and 80% on the audience score. And that reminds me that when I was at the film festival, somebody pulled up The Girl Who Wore Freedom on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't even know we were on Rotten Tomatoes, but we've got a 95%, I think, audience approval rating. I was super stunned and excited about that.
That's awesome.
So that was great. Anyway, yeah, check out The Automat. Totally worth your time. And I have another one I can't wait to talk about next week. So.
Well, you're ahead of us. So Jason's running out of films.
I did learn, like at that film festival, I saw one narrative feature. So there was one that Evan Williams was in, who's been on, you know, he's a, you know, pretty famous movie star. I forget what things he's in. Jason can pull him up really quick, but he's on, you know, he's on some pretty big like series and things like that. So he was in this film. And I mean, it's not a bad film, but it's a narrative film. And it was about it's called Mysterious Circumstances. And it's about the mysterious disappearance of Meriwether Lewis. Now, I was so excited to learn about this because I didn't know that Meriwether Lewis disappeared mysteriously. But it was a narrative film and, you know, it just wasn't my jam, but I could not get enough of the documentaries. So I think I'm just wired that way. I'm passionate about them. I love them and I prefer them over narrative features. Typically I still watch stuff. Like I still watch, you know, narrative stuff like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I love that. There are things I really love. But if I'm going to pick a film at a film festival, it's going to be a documentary every time.
It's probably, and I would imagine at a film festival, it's probably a safer bet than a narrative
film. It is. It is. And the shorts are not bad. You know, I learned the joy of a short at the last film festival I went to. You can go to one block for an hour and you can watch four films. And, you know, if it's bad, you're not out a ton of time. So at a film festival, the shorts are pretty cool.
Okay. As we're wrapping up here, Christian, do you want to direct? I know you made some, or someone's making posts about Join Us. I don't know if it's the screening at the museum that's coming up or.
Yeah, you know, you can go, there is a link, or we keep putting them up on social media, where you can buy tickets in New York City if you want to come to the French Institute / Alliance Française to see The Girl Who Wore Freedom, to meet me, to meet Danny, the actual girl who wore freedom. But you know what, you guys, we really need people to join us on Patreon. If you have not done that yet, I really would invite you to do that. We're making some great content. You'll get to be part of the ground floor. We would love to have you join us. Now, another interesting conversation I have with one of my board members is he started me thinking about how I could seek investors as opposed to donations for my next film. And we can talk about that later, but it was an interesting idea the way he proposed it. So it might be a way to go to raise that $300,000 for the Carentan project. We'll see.
Well, that's a change in your tune.
I know. But Mr. Bob Miller sort of laid it out for me in a very interesting way. You know, he's a big businessman. He had an incredible manufacturing company that he ran and also is a farmer, has a couple of farms, and just understands the business part of things in a way that I do not. It's been really great to have his wisdom and experience sort of advising me. So yeah, something I'm considering.
Okay. Awesome. Well, another great podcast episode. So thanks, Jason, Christian, and thanks to you, the listening audience, for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and you can be the one to tell it.
Yes, you can. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Documentary First. We really appreciate your partnership with us. We can't do any of this without you. So thank you for listening, donating, and following along on our journey. We are supported by generous donations from people just like you. To make a donation, visit thegirlwhowarefreedom.com or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/documentaryfirst. To learn more about our other works in progress, visit documentaryfirst.com or follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.